went to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse.
All right. Hello again. This is Ken Logan. I'm a family practice doctor. And the third Thursday of each month, which happens to be today, from 6 to 7 in the evening, I do the show called The Doctor's Inn. And that's what you're going to listen to right now, I hope. On The Doctor's Inn, I do programs that deal with health and medical subjects. If you had a subject of that related to that that you would like me to cover on the show, you could email me at klogan.md@yahoo.com. And that's the letter K. klogan.md@yahoo.com. And just identify yourself and let me know what you'd like me to cover. Little disclaimer here. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or to have your events listed, visit Friends of the Art. And I'm not sure if that's an email address or what. And by Drunken Dumpling in Chico, serving locally sourced, fresh, handmade Asian fusion comfort food at 1414 Park Avenue, Suite 120, just behind Nobby's. Open 4 to 9 p.m. Tuesday through Thursday and from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Fridays and Saturdays. Details on Facebook, Instagram, and at drunkendumplingchico.com. Drunken Dumpling, where they love food, flavor, and our community. today's show is going to entail a few words about the virus. COVID, just to simply make sure that we're hopefully on the same page relative to a couple important points. Then I'll be speaking to two guests who are actually here in the studio with me. I'm not going to introduce them right yet, so sit on the edge of your chairs. I'm going to get there. And it's they're going to talk about a crisis. That's currently we have in our country, a crisis revolving around something called gasoline. And you, the listener, right now might be thinking, well, why in the world would this radio show, a radio show that deals with health issues, be getting into a subject about our relationship with gasoline? What's up with that, you might be saying? Well, please stay tuned because these two individuals sitting here with me, Tom Reed and David Welsh, are going to open our minds and encourage us all to do some thinking and hopefully acting. So please hold on because I'll introduce you to them in a minute. So now, first of all, relative to COVID, the thing I'm going to talk about today briefly has to do with vaccines. But before I kind of lay out the, you know, the plan of attack relative to COVID virus vaccinations and boosters and all that, to give you a plan, I'm going to say something about vaccinations in general. Well, not necessarily in general, but about a specific vaccination and the benefits, how we see how vaccinations help us. Because I'm just acknowledging the fact that there are some people in the community, in the world, in the country, and in the world that are anti-vaccination for a variety of reasons, I suspect. And I understand that. I mean, I can respect that. However, here is an example of the benefits of vaccinations. Recently noted in a journal called the Annals of Internal Medicine, and this is from earlier this month, human papillomavirus, or HPV, vaccination was associated with 90% reduction in four types of cervical human papillomavirus infections in sexually active girls and young women in a cross-sectional study. And according to the researchers, for unvaccinated females in the study, 14 to 24 years of age, the vaccine had a 74% impact against quadrivalent vaccine-type prevalent infection, possibly because they benefited from a strong herd immunity effect thing indirectly. Anyway, so the point is, the incidence of these four human papillomaviruses has gone down, 90% reduction after the institution of vaccinations for our youth, male and female youth. And remember, human papillomavirus, and specifically a few of the subtypes of that virus, are responsible for cervical cancer in women. So what we now will watch for, of course, after this drop in this infection rate because of vaccinations, we will watch for, in the near future, upcoming future, a drop in cervical cancer cases. Good. And that's because of vaccinations. All right. I know you're waiting to hear Tom Reed and David Welsh, and I'll get there in a minute. We can't ignore that the COVID virus pandemic is still here, and our federal government, fortunately, is stating, and I agree, that it's a public health emergency still in place through July of this year, and I agree with that. One thing that I know about the COVID virus is that there's a lot that we don't know about it. But the part of the problem is that the thing is changing, mutating as time goes on. How can we help? And therefore, the severity of the infection, and maybe in the future, the ability for the vaccines to do adequately with it, depend on the variant that happens to be here at any time. Well, the current variant, one of the Omicron variants, is less lethal currently. Do we know what it will be tomorrow? No, we don't. And you would say to yourself, how could we decrease the likelihood for additional variants into the future, getting on top, you know, being ugly? And we say, you decrease the number of virus carrying humans, decrease the body of virus that's mutating in the world, in the country and in the world. That's the only way I know of to decrease the likelihood for additional worrisome variants. We have no other way. And how do we do that? Well, you get vaccinated. You also do masking, social distancing, and avoiding crowds in areas of high transmission. Communities of high transmission. But you also get vaccinated as a country, as a world. And we've had the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines for over a year. We've witnessed overall safety, what they can and can't do. We've witnessed COVID virus and how nasty it is. And we all know the virus sucks. The vaccine does not suck. That's not a medical term, but I used it anyway. COVID virus, as you know, if you don't know, I'm going to tell you, has killed over 1 million of us Americans over the last 2.5 years. Over 1 million Americans have died from the COVID virus. So although vaccinations are not perfect, they're what we have, and we do our best. That's what we should all do. Do your best. And the best right now includes being vaccinated. The 2 points for getting vaccinated for anything is helping yourself relative to not getting that infection or getting a milder case of that infection. What's the other benefit and even more important benefit of getting vaccinated? You may wonder that. I'm asking you that to think about that. Well, it's the most important reason to get vaccinated for anything, and that's to help others in your community. That's what we do it for. That's why I get vaccinated for stuff. It's for me, but it's for the community as well, to decrease the virus, in this case, that's out in the community. So COVID, it's current. There are two vaccinations you could start with if you haven't been vaccinated. You get the original two shots with either Pfizer, and Pfizer starts with a P, P-F-I-Z-E-R, Pfizer or Moderna. So wherever you go to get your vaccination for COVID, they'll know which ones are now present, and that's Moderna and Pfizer. Then after 6 months have passed, it's time your immunity has started to go down against the virus, and it's time to get the first booster. So 6 months after the original series of two shots, you get a booster, number one. Then some people are advised to get booster number two, 4 months after booster number one. And who are those people currently that are advised to get booster number two, 4 months after booster number one? Those would be people 50 years of age and older. All people 50 years of age and older are advised to get booster number two, approximately 4 months after booster number one. If you're 12 years of age or older with and have some chronic disease, medical condition that gives moderate to severe immunocompromised situation in you, 12 years in age and older, so in that age group, you too would be advised to get a second booster 4 months after booster number one. And if you're saying, well, what's moderately severe immunocompromised? I'm not going to go over a list right now, but if you have chronic medical conditions that you're seeking, that you have regular, this would be people who have regular medical care from a doctor or a mid-level practitioner for, you ask them if it's appropriate for you to get booster number two. If you started out your vaccinations with the third kind of COVID vaccination that was available, Johnson & Johnson, which I believe is no longer available because it didn't, anyway, long story, but it's not available now, I think. Then if you started with that, then 2 months after that, 2 months, because it was less able to affect in a positive way immunity, 2 months after the original Johnson & Johnson, it was advised to get your booster. Now, that's time has probably come and gone now, so anybody who got the Johnson & Johnson, if you haven't had any booster, get a boost a booster, I say, we all say, with Pfizer or Moderna. Then, 4 months after that, get your second booster. So if you have the Johnson & Johnson, of course, it's undoubtedly longer than 2 months ago. It's time to get a booster with Pfizer or Moderna. And then 4 months after that, possibly get a booster. Talk to your doctor. And if you're looking to obtain a booster number one or booster number two, and by the way, booster just means the same vaccine. It's the same vaccine. It's just boosting your immunity. If you're looking to get booster number one or booster number two and you now or recently have had a COVID infection, the advice is to wait 3 months from recovery of that infection to get that booster you're looking to get. And it is advised for you to get. If you had the infection of COVID and 3 months have passed, yes, get a booster because your immunity is waning, is going down. There you go. That's I didn't make that up, but I do agree with that stuff. we're going to be talking with two people, and those people are Tom Reed, social activist, community member in Chico. Can you talk into that mic? Let's see if we...
I'd be happy to.
Oh, you got it, dude.
Is that working?
And David Welch. He's also a social activist, community member, healthcare professional, and bicycle enthusiast. And, gosh, I'm trying to think if there's any other... I'm sure there's a lot more, but hello, David Welch.
Hello there, Ken. Happy to be here.
All right, and we're hearing you on the air. That's a green for go. I know you, the listeners, are wondering what Tom Reed and David Welch are going to talk to us about today, and centering around this gasoline thing that we're all pulling our hair out about. And I've known these gentlemen for many years. They are wise. I'm going to absorb wisdom from these two, and I hope you too, you the listeners, are going to also. So welcome, Tom.
Thank you, Ken. Good
welcome,
to be here.
David.
Thank you.
So, what are you doing here, David?
Well, this time when, as we're certainly seeing a great deal of angst around gasoline prices and a great deal of complaint about that, and it seems like that's a time when it might be a fertile time to try and help people open up their minds a little bit to think differently about transportation and about how people get around, and in some ways even about how we shape our communities around transportation and longer-term thinking about what kind of communities we want to have in the long run and what kind of communities we want to live in and how that interacts with things like how we get around. And I am...
There's that wisdom again, David.
That's I may be a wise guy, but wisdom I don't claim. But anyway,
it's there.
I'm 71 years old. Mm-hmm. When I was 19, I made a choice to make bicycling my primary local transportation. I'm not one of those people who's quite devoted enough to live entirely car-free. I do have an automobile, but I still, for more than 50 years, use a bicycle for most of my local transportation. And I think that not only keeps me healthier and more physically fit, saves me an enormous amount of money, keeps me even emotionally healthier, and I think it's good for the community. I arrive places in happier and more relaxed when I ride my bike someplace than I do when I drive my car.
And David, this being a health related show, you've just linked onto something there that I just want to point out again. I just reiterate to the listeners, you just said that bicycle riding over the last 50 years, you're 71 years old, not that 71 is old, but you look marvelous. You said that bicycle riding over the last 50 years helped you not only your health, it saves you money. And you were, I think, thinking when you said saves you money relative to your automobile and gasoline, et cetera, but mm-hmm. also health.
Yes.
Think about health things that don't cost you money because you're staying healthy.
Indeed.
That's important too, obviously.
Right. And in recent years, I've gone through just a couple of years ago, and this is kind of interesting because it would be unexpected for most people. I was invited by the Butte County Health Department, which part of their mission as the health department is the prevention of traumatic injury. They're not just interested in things like infectious diseases, but they're also interested in traumatic injury. And they have a program related to bicycle safety. The biggest part of their program focuses on children and events that we do in schools. But they helped me to, under the sponsorship of the health department, I went through a program to become certified by the League of American Bicyclists as what's called a league cycling instructor.
Holy cow.
Certified to teach safe cycling.
Oh, wow.
And despite the fact that I had been by this point riding a bicycle regularly for 50 years, going through that certification program made me even better than I was before. I was already a very confident traffic cyclist, but I'm better now than I was before that as a result of that program. And I'm enthused. I'm hoping once we get this election season over with, which is something that's right now occupying a lot of my time, and it's really important, please, that everybody, every one of our listeners, vote. That's critically important.
Vote. But, what are you talking about? Wait a minute. Let's dip into that just a little bit, if you don't mind, David. What did you just say?
Vote. Yes. And you've all, I think everyone within reach of your voice has received a ballot in the mail, and I'd strongly encourage people to vote. And I won't get into here on this program, won't get into telling them who to vote for, though
right.
I'm happy to do that in other settings. But the main thing is, don't let that thing sit around. Don't let it get lost. Get it in soon. It's easy. You can put it. You can put it in the mail. There's no stamp required. The mail does deliver it very reliably. Or there are a number of places around town where there are ballot drop boxes. There's one at City Hall. There's one at the Butte County Library. There's one at the west end of North Valley Plaza. At least those are three that I know of that are ballot drop boxes that are very secure that you can drop those in.
I hear you, and I get mine by mail, and that's I'm going to put mine in the mail too. Tom?
Yeah, just to kind of follow up on that. In the unlikely event that you have not received a ballot or have lost it, misplaced it, was stolen, it's fallen behind your TV or whatnot, just call County Elections at 552-3400. Explain that, and they will send you a replacement ballot.
So if anyone listening has not received their ballot in the mail and they should have, tell us again, Tom, where and what the number is and how they could obtain one.
And just to be clear, this is not only if you have not received one. If you lost it, lost it, fell into the garbage disposal.
Whatnot. Yeah, voting is important.
Right.
And here's how you can obtain it.
If you do not have the ability to vote, call the county elections folks at 552-3400.
552-3400. 3400. 552-3400. Is a phone number you can call to obtain a ballot for the upcoming
replacement ballot,
or the original ballot for the upcoming election.
And don't worry about being busted for voting twice. Once you request a new ballot, they invalidate the previous ballot.
So they take care of that.
So you couldn't vote twice even if you tried.
Yeah, yeah.
But if
and don't let anybody tell you that that's a problem because they don't allow that
access to a ballot call.
Very good. Thank you, Tom. Thank you very much.
Pretty well covers it.
Yeah, very good. Voting, important.
Right.
Where were we?
So anyway, back to a little bit about bicycling. Chico is actually a remarkably easy town to bicycle in. It's relatively compact. It's flat as a pancake. The biggest hills are freeway overpasses. And if you are strategic about avoiding a few of the busiest streets, which it's not that hard to do, you can get most anywhere by bicycle pretty safely in this town. But just as I was saying a minute ago, there actually is a lot that a person can learn about how to make themselves safer by how they behave as a bicyclist. And I would strongly encourage anyone who's interested in that, you can do a couple of things. Go to the website of the League of American Bicyclists, and you will look around on that website for Smart Cycling. And that's where they have all their resources on bicycle safety and just things as simple as exactly where you place yourself in the lane. And things like that can affect the way drivers behave around you in a very positive way.
And that's called the League of
American Bicyclists.
So on the web on the internet, League of American Bicyclists.
Yes.
All right.
And then go onto YouTube and just look for Smart Cycling on there, and you will find a lot of videos on there. And there's just some excellent stuff. And as I was saying, simple things, small changes in how you act, and a lot of it is counterintuitive. For example, it's not actually safest to be as far to the edge of the road as you can possibly be, because motorists don't see you over there as well. When you move just a little bit further out from the edge of the road, you make yourself more visible to motorists, and they notice you more.
Good point.
Things like that actually make a real difference. These
and what do you have on your head when you're riding?
Oh, a helmet, of course.
A helmet.
Yes, and I wear a good helmet when I ride, and I also, especially when I'm riding at night, I am spectacularly lit up. and so things like helmet lights, clothing that makes you visible, things like that are really
important.
Good. But it's a lot of little simple technique things, like I say, of where you place yourself on the road, how you approach an intersection. Those kinds of things can make a big difference in your safety on the road. And we'd love, of course, to get to the point where we have the kind of situation they have in the Netherlands with the amazing array of bicycle paths and things like that, that you can get most places there without really needing to interact with cars much.
Oh, wow.
But even without that, even with the roads we have as they are, it's possible to bicycle quite safely. I feel very safe. You know, like I said, I'm an old guy, but I still feel quite safe and comfortable riding on the roads around here. And I look forward, hopefully, in the next months and years to come, to develop more classes for adults and things like that in this area on helping people to become more confident on the roads.
Excellent. How much gasoline does that require to drive your bicycle on the road?
Doesn't take any.
No gasoline.
It's amazing.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
And a decent bicycle. I was just calculating this the other day. The bicycle that I've been riding around town, I bought 35 years ago for $500 and some odd.
You bought your current bike 35 years ago?
Yeah. I have several of them, but the one that I ride is my main transportation bike, the one I ride around town. Like I say, $535 35 years ago, and I've replaced a few tires and cables and chains on it, but those aren't terribly expensive. So my cost per year for transportation for that thing is pretty low, and I drive my car. While I do have a car, I drive it little enough that I always have to get the dust off the windshield when I go to drive it. So
good.
Because it's sat there and gotten dusty. So that's I know that when the windshield's dusty, that's good, because it's been a while since I've had to take the car out.
Great. And your cardiovascular, your heart and your lungs are benefiting when you're riding bicycle.
Quite superbly so. Yes.
Very good. And burning up calories.
Yes.
Weight was a problem for you. I notice it's not.
Well, it's
could be if you weren't a bicyclist.
Indeed. I was a fat child.
Were you?
Yeah.
Oh.
And it wasn't really, and kind of was that until I took up riding a bicycle at age 18 that I took up regularly. And that kind of helped take care of that for me.
There you go.
And so
Ken just blinked at me or nodded or something.
Oh,
so I guess.
Oh, Tom, do you anything to say about?
I guess I'll talk, but not about bicycling.
I'm
going to go off in a little bit of a different direction. I think David and I have kind of a division of labor in some respects.
we'll all interact as this goes.
I believe that's true. So. I think we've already mentioned that many people are annoyed, upset, enraged by increases in gasoline prices. I'm not pleased by it myself. The response of Republican political leaders, and I use the term loosely, and many Democratic political leaders are to try to increase the supply of petroleum, increase the supply of gas. That's going in exactly the opposite direction from where we should be trending, okay? There's an old saying I'm sure you've all heard, that is that if you find yourself in a deep hole, the first thing to do is to stop digging, okay? We are overly dependent upon fossil fuels. The appropriate response to this crisis, because many people, particularly lower and middle income people, this is a severe hardship for them. The response should not be to increase petroleum
Right.
It should be to move in another direction. I'm going to talk about two things here. One is things that
Can we just say that, just repeat that one more time. We have a problem with obtaining of gasoline and the gasoline issue, Russia, all
correct.
That kind of thing.
Correct.
And to move away, it would make more sense. Let's not forget, it's very important, move away from increased gasoline
right.
production and thinking of alternatives. Now's the time.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Tom.
You know, a lot of people think that's not realistic. I think that's nonsense. But I'm going to do a couple of things here. One is I'm going to talk a little about what people can do individually. So you don't just sit around sweating and swearing and so forth. You can actually reduce the price of gasoline, okay, that you use in your daily life. And the first...
Decrease the cost of gasoline
Decrease the net cost of gasoline mm-hmm, that you use.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these things are pretty obvious, mm-hmm. but they're things that even though I know them, I don't always apply them in my daily life.
Uh-huh.
So the first thing, and this is going to apply to public health also, the first thing is to slow down, okay? If you drive 70 miles an hour... and you reduce your mileage to 60 miles an hour, your mileage increases about 11 to 14%.
Say that one more time, please.
If you reduce your driving speed from 70 miles an hour to 40 miles an hour...
To
60, excuse me.
From 70 to 60. Just that.
From
70 miles per hour to 60 miles per hour on the freeway or wherever you are. That reduction does what?
Will increase your mileage by about 11 to 14%. There's a lot of variables here, but that's...
Increase your mileage by 11 to 14%.
11 to 14%. That means that if you drive, say, from here to Reading, mm-hmm. You would save... How many miles is that? 80
70.
Miles? Yeah, 70 miles. So let's say you use 3 gallons of gas.
Mm-hmm.
You would save... 10%. But you'd save a couple of bucks just on that.
And so if you saving that, money and... very good. Decreasing pollution if you're using less gas by driving not quite so fast.
And there's another public health issue that I'm sure you would think about, and that is that there are less accidents. And the accidents there are less catastrophic. For example, I have a little chart here that I got.
By driving at a slower pace.
A slower pace. I got this from Mr. Google just last night. Let's see, at 50 miles an hour, it takes you 198 feet to stop, average. That includes reaction time, and that includes the actual braking time. So it's 198. At 70 miles an hour, it takes 348 feet on average. So that's almost twice as much. And the difference of that extra 150 feet is the difference between running over a kid walking out from school and not running over the kid walking out from school. And if you do get in an accident... If you and I get in an accident at 50 miles an hour, we may die, but there's a good chance we'll survive. At 70, 75 miles an hour, not so much. Back in the late 70s, you guys probably remember this, there was a petroleum crisis, an oil crisis. A lot of geopolitical stuff, but we won't go into that. But in this country, service stations were only open like a day or two a week. You're only allowed to purchase a certain amount of gas. One of the responses of the federal government was to impose a national speed limit of 55 miles an hour.
Oh, right.
You may remember that, okay? And then when things loosened up, that was taken away. I think that was a serious, serious, serious mistake. They did notice, keeping track, that less people died, there were less accidents, and I don't know if anybody actually kept track of the tons less... air pollutants, but I'm sure that somebody probably has figured that out. So it was a much healthier environment. And you know what? Speaking simply for myself, after a couple of weeks, I didn't care that the speed limit was 55 instead of 65 or 70. I simply allocated another 5 or 10 minutes. If I was driving from Concord, my home at the time, to San Francisco, it would take me an extra 5-10 minutes. Who cares, you know, once you get used to that. So we need to slow down. It's safer, better for the environment, and you'll save money. A couple other things real quick about just if you want to save money. When you stop at a stop sign, do it slowly. Don't slam on the brakes. When you leave the stop sign, accelerate slowly. Don't floor it. You will save gas. You will save money. Also, there's things like, again, common sense. If you need to go to the grocery store and the hardware store and the bookstore and the pharmacy, do it all at one time. Don't take four separate trips. You can save yourself 5, 10, 15, 20 miles. That's, you know, half a gallon of gas or something. So I guess my advice is that if you don't do these things or you don't think about doing these things, I don't want to hear you whining about how about the high price of gases. You're to some extent bringing it on yourself. So I'm going to stop at that.
Hey, can you recap that? So Tom just laid out about four things that can help us decrease our use of gasoline and therefore decrease our pollution, decrease our cost of when you are driving your vehicle.
Right.
And those are...
The first one is to slow down.
Slow down. Drive at a slower speed. If you use less gasoline, and therefore...
If you simply drive with the speed limit.
Yeah, speed limit would
be a place to
start.
It's probably going to make a big difference for a lot of people. And as I'm old, and I try now to drive 5 miles below the speed limit. And
yeah, it's something to know, having our heads, you know? To know the importance of driving slower. Okay.
Okay. Driving slower, basically brake and accelerate slowly and smoothly instead of slamming on the brakes and flooring it.
I never thought of that. So when you're coming up to a stop sign or a stop light, kind of slowing down ahead of time instead of going at a more rapid pace and go slower and then accelerate a little more gradually going out will use less gasoline.
It's also safer because you have better control of your vehicle.
Yeah.
The other things that I mentioned were planning your shopping trip so you can do three or four at the same time. And I guess I have one more thing here. It was really, really important. Oh, I know what it was. If you have a vehicle, particularly, I have a little truck, a little Toyota Tacoma, and several times I have been doing some yard work, and I go down to, I got a truckload of gravel, and I left the gravel in the truck for several days.
Oh.
And drove around.
Oops.
With several hundred extra pounds. That gravel did not need to go anywhere. Okay, but that I don't have no idea how much that reduced my mileage, but it certainly reduced it. So if you're like me, and sometimes you're too lazy to unload the gravel from your truck, unload it from the truck. The truck will thank you for it,
and you'll require less gasoline as well.
And we have now covered again two more public health issues: the issue of avoiding accidents and the issue of inhaling less exhaust fumes.
So say that again: when you're driving slower on the freeway and it decreases the likelihood for a bad accident. If you do have a bad accident, you stop more efficiently and better if you're driving slower, and you're less likely to run over somebody, et cetera.
Right.
You'll have more control over your vehicle. Let's all keep that in mind.
Yeah. You summarized that very nicely, Ken. Yeah. I got a couple of things now, but maybe David would like to jump back in here.
All right. Well, you know, one of the things, and we've been focusing a lot on what you might call short-term things and the immediate issues that people are having around the price of gas, but I think we have what's both an immediate and a long-term issue coming up here in that there are some major proposals for development happening around Chico, and those proposals are going to strongly affect the kind of community we live in over the rest of our lives and our children's lives. And I think it's very important that we begin to think about building housing, building development that can be served adequately by public transit and by active transportation being bicycling and walking. Building housing where we get away from the mode of having all our houses in one place and all our stores in another place, where we get back to the way older cities used to be developed, where you could walk to the corner store, you could walk to the coffee shop, you could walk to the bar and back home again safely. And that's the way our cities used to be developed. And then in the post-World War II period was when we really moved to this area of segregating all of those things into separate areas of our towns and cities. And we need to get back to integrating our workplaces and our shopping places into the same areas as where we live. We need to bring our housing closer together and not build the kind of sprawl development that can only be served by driving cars to get there. And as I say, there are proposals right now that are very active that are going for example, for the largest housing development that has ever been proposed for the Chico area, as is in the pipeline right now. And I think it's important for people to get aware of that. It's called Valley's Edge. And
Valley's Edge, is that the name of the development?
Yes, that's the name of the development. It's on the southeast side of Chico, down near the Skyway and Bruce Road. And it's enormous. And much of it is very low density, the kind of density that tends to produce the largest number of car trips. And by contrast, very much not very far away from it, we have the kind of development that's happening in Merriam Park, where we see the kind of development that is really what we need to do more of in the future, where we're bringing bringing houses closer together and where we're bringing houses closer to stores and coffee shops and entertainment venues and things like that. We're bringing all of that stuff closer together so that people can walk or bike to the things that they need to get to. And if they do need to drive, have much shorter trips. And that's really going to make that the decisions we make about that have the potential to have a huge effect on the kind of community we are and the kind of transportation that we use.
Hey, and how on into the future? So if a listener wanted to learn more about and or get active in voice relative to the decision making of projects that you just brought up, how could they do that?
Actually, I think if you go on the City of Chico website, City Chico has quite an active and extensive website, and go on their website and look for the Planning Department. And the Planning Department will have announcements of things like Planning Commission meetings and
meetings.
Yes, uh-huh. And what do they call these? CEQA, environmental impact documents and things like that. And getting familiar with things like that, because these developments are going to have a big effect on all of us for many years to come, and it's important that we not leave those decisions to other people and that folks
be blind.
Get involved in those decisions.
Yeah, we don't need to not be blind to that. We should know what's happening.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, and how it will sort out into the future,
right,
like you said. Wow, wow.
So, like I say, if we build the kind of communities that work well for active transportation and for transit, we could have a much more humane, much more livable community and contribute our little part to a more livable planet in general.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, I have something popped into my head.
And this is Tom talking now.
This is Tom again.
You just heard David Welch. Now you're going to listen to Tom Reed. Yeah.
A whole
different. Both are wise people.
Yeah, right.
Hit us with some wisdom, Tom.
I'm going to hit you with some wisdom, actually. This just popped into my head as we were discussing this. And I think part of the issue here, and a thing that people can do to reduce their prices or the cost of fuel, we in this country have an obsession with speed. That if I can, I could drive to Reading at 70 miles an hour, or I could drive to Reading at 55 miles an hour, and actually it would be like about a 5-minute difference. But the concept of speed is so embedded in our society, it makes it difficult to do that. So I would just suggest that all of us maybe do a little meditation or prayer or thoughtfulness or mindfulness or whatever, and ask what it is about speed that is really so appealing to us, and if it's going to really hurt us, or if we're going to really lose something of value in our life if we slow down a little bit. So that just kind of popped into my head, but I think it's worth reflecting on. What I really wanted to talk about, though, I mean, I really wanted to talk about that, but the other thing, too. I mentioned that the Republican leaders and some, too many Democrats are looking upon the increased oil productivity as kind of the solution to this problem, and I'm saying that it's not for a couple of reasons. One is that bumping up the availability of oil is not going to happen overnight. A lot of people, it sounds like, okay, we have a tap full of gasoline here, and the progressives won't let us turn the tap on, that's why the prices are so high. Well, that's nonsense. Even if the federal government opened everything to oil exploration, it would take years for that to be ramped up through the geophysical investigations, through the drilling apparatus, through the transporting it, refining it, all that kind of stuff. Whereas, on the other hand, with something like the Green New Deal, we can start moving on this immediately. we could, and I haven't done the arithmetic here, but I believe that we probably could involve, could probably install 10 million solar panels this year simply by taxing the super wealthy, putting the money into a pot, putting out bids for private sector contractors, hiring workers to work for those contractors, and at the end of the year, with those 10 million solar panels, and you can do the same thing with wind power, you can do the same thing with all kinds of stuff, we can begin moving immediately to addressing this issue. And I want to toss something in because I think this is interesting, and I bet that many of your listeners have not heard this. People say that solar energy, the problem is when the sun goes down, you don't have it. And to some extent, that's true, but if it's hooked into a broader grid, that can be taken into account. Also, there is research being done for more and more efficient batteries to save electrical energy. A few years ago, people thought that electric cars were a joke. They're not a joke anymore. They're not a joke anymore.
They're here and they're useful.
Yeah, and there are other mechanisms for conserving electrical energy, mm-hmm. Which I won't go into now, but they're very interesting. But that stuff's going on. If we put the money into that research that we put into investigating oil and subsidizing oil companies. Mm-hmm. By the way, Chevron just last quarter tripled its profits from the same quarter a year ago. I thought you'd like to know that.
Say that one more time.
Chevron Oil tripled their profits over the same quarter last year. Katie Porter, a congresswoman from California, a progressive congresswoman from California, is introducing legislation to, I think it would be, I'm not sure what it's called, but an excess profits tax of some sort to have those people. That's too much. That's too much. Yeah. That's too much profit.
It is excess profit. It's, wow. Huh.
And I think I had one more little item here, but maybe not.
We've got plenty of time.
Okay.
If you guys don't talk some more, they're going to have to listen to the listeners are going to have to listen to me whine about something. So, bring it on.
So all this I'm talking about, and also the kind of infrastructure for what David is talking about, is going to be very, 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 very profoundly affected by the outcome of this year's elections. And this is not, you know, just David and I rambling on, and you know. Mm-hmm. This is stuff that people need to take into account. There will also be people who say, well, we can't do this overnight. You know, we can't do this overnight. You're like asking us to make these huge, huge transformations. We need more time to get this together. Well, the Kyoto Conference was in 1992. The Kyoto Protocols came out a couple of years thereafter. That's 30 years since the conference. 30 years. And much of this was known before then, but at least 30 years during which very few countries took anything near the kind of action that's really necessary in order to stabilize the climate. So if we're not having quite as soft a landing as we would like here, we really have only ourselves to blame.
True that.
And better now, you know, 5 years from now, we'll be saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. Well, we can't do it now because, so we need to do it now. Indeed we do.
Yeah, very good. And and how you vote is important. And reading about items on the ballot and people on the ballot relative to your future and the future of this country and our community, et cetera. Good thinking, guys. See, I told you were wise.
Right. Well, I'm not sure wise is the right word, but we do ramble on.
Let me toss in one more little thing, if I might, and that is a pitch for anybody who is on the Facebook thingy. That's so far the way to
Facebook,
access
Facebook, what's
it.
That?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a very strange thing.
But
there is what you might call an embryonic organization here in Chico that has started up. We're calling ourselves the Chico Safe Streets Coalition. And our focus is on trying to make the streets of our city more welcoming to people who are using anything other than a car. In other words, not only for bicyclists, all of us are in fact bicyclists, but we also want to make the streets safer for pedestrians and wheelchair users and folks who are getting around and in ways other than by car.
Great.
And Chico Safe Streets Coalition is our name at this point, and we do have a Facebook page, and we are just, as I say, embryonic. We're just kind of beginning as an organization, so there's a lot that we still have to develop, and anybody who wants to learn more about it, come and get involved, and we're doing our best to kind of develop that, and it's kind of interesting to know how we came to be. A while back, the California Department of Transportation, a few months ago, they are planning to do a what are they calling it? Basically, some heavy duty maintenance they're planning to do on Highway 32 where it passes through the city of Chico, and they held a public comment meeting for people to make comments, and several of us independently, each of us on our own, went to that meeting and made comments about things they could do to make Highway 32 safer for pedestrians and bicyclists and wheelchair users. And Caltrans, at the local level, really wasn't very interested in hearing those comments, and they were relatively dismissive of them. And that gave us the feeling that, you know, maybe if we form an organization and start to put a group voice behind this, maybe we can begin to have a little more effect on this. So we're still working on that, still at the early stages, but that's what we're hoping to accomplish, and looking for ways that we can make small modifications here and there that will make the streets a little more welcoming to non-motorists.
Very good. Sounds good. Hey, Bernie Sanders just introduced a bill the other day that you guys know about, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Can you inform the listeners about that while I do something over here?
Sure. Which one was this one?
Oh, the reintroduce the single payer.
It's the 2022 version. Yes, 15 co-sponsors.
And of course, when it comes to health, both of us are passionate about the idea of a of a universal, truly universal, single-payer Medicare for all, whatever name one wants to apply to it, a single-payer healthcare system for America, a thing that Bernie's been crusading for forever, and both of us have been involved in for a very long time. I'm a retired nurse. Tom is a single-payer activist for at least the last 30 years, and that's something we've been deeply involved in, and just any sort of realistic look at the facts tells you that that's one of the things we can do to improve the health of people in our country, and to make us all a lot healthier is to give us access to health care that we need. And Tom?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I agree with everything David said. David and I are both on the board of the Butte County Healthcare Coalition, which is also known as North State Medicare for All. And anybody who would like to find out about the organization or become involved in the organization or do anything to support Medicare for All, single-payer health care, I'm going to give you my phone number right over the air here, and feel free to give me a call, and we can talk about what's going on and what we're doing and how you can plug in. So my name is Tom Reed. My phone number is 530-966-3414, 966-3414. And if you want to find out about it, give me a call.
All right. So, yeah, and that's just something, as I said, that's of all the changes we can make in this country that would improve our health, giving all of us the ability to have access to high quality health care when we need it is probably one of the single biggest things that we could do in that regard.
And you speak with knowledge about healthcare and the needs of humans and the lack of healthcare for certain humans because you have some background in healthcare, David Welsh?
I spent 37 years as a registered nurse at Enloe Hospital, and so...
Have you seen the aftermath of people without healthcare availability?
So much. One of the things that was so disturbing so many times was somebody... Oddly enough, our system does better with the big crisis than it does with continuing maintenance care.
Tell me about
it. So again and again and again, the circumstance of someone who comes into the hospital in an extreme circumstance and they require emergency heart bypass surgery. Mm-hmm. And then they go home to a situation where they can't get the medicine they need or don't have access to adequate follow-up to maintain this extraordinarily expensive and invasive thing that we've done to them. We've managed to do this great big thing, but we can't do the little things.
And you've known this because you've worked a lot in heart rehabilitation,
cardiac rehab. That was my work for most of my career, was doing patient education and exercise programs with heart patients.
So you speak, these words you just spoke are from experience you've had with people.
Yes,
humans.
Indeed. Yes, indeed. And I've spent an awful lot of time in those roads. And one of the words that would show up so often in patient charts, little phrases, was lost to follow-up. And it would go something like, 12 years ago this patient had heart surgery, and after a couple of years they were lost to follow-up, and now they come back again with new and worse problems. And that lost to follow-up usually happens because the patient didn't have health insurance that enabled them to get in to see a doctor regularly.
We need single-payer health care, Medicare for all, don't we, guys?
Yeah, sure do.
Thank you very much to Tom Reed and David Welsh. I told you we, the listeners, would be smarter. We would benefit from their wisdom from these two. Bicycle riding is better for our health and easier on our wallet, does not burn gasoline. And Tom talked to us about appropriate use of vehicles, decreasing your use, decreasing your speed, etc. And then again, walking and bicycle riding is healthy for us and is inexpensive and doesn't pollute the air, doesn't cost gasoline, obviously. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Ken.
I hope we'll speak again in the near future.
Yes, I'm sure we will.
Always a pleasure to come
in.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks.
The Dr. Zinn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by D.A. Lampe Construction. That's D.A. Lampe, L-A-M-P-E, L-A-M-P-E, a proud supporter of KZFR and community radio in Northern California. For more information, visit D.A. Lampe, L-A-M-P-E, construction.com. And by Mountain Sports, for over 45 years providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, backpacking, camping, traveling, and enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. till 5:30 p.m. and 11 to 4 on Sunday at 176 East 3rd Street in downtown Chico. I do want you to remember that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. They were actually my opinions. Dr. Kenneth Logan, family practitioner, Chico, California. And I thank Mark for... Mark, I forget Mark's last name. He's the intern here for helping today. I'll learn his last name. Trust me. Thank you, Mark. And thank you, Tom Reed and David Welsh. And let's see if I can get... stay tuned for Planetary Radio. Let's see if we can get a little bit of Dr. Wu by Steely Dan. Let's see if I can make that pop up. play.
Crucified, I was on the other side.